Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to Strength to Be Human. This is the Gus House series with my co-host. Welcome back, John Patrick Robbins. Thank you very much for being on here with me on the show. And I want to thank the audience for their texts and emails and concerns. I was out there a little while with a cold, but it turned out to be pneumonia. So it turned to be a little bit more serious. Nothing life or death, just a lot of medication, a lot of trying to take care of myself a little bit better, and it's kind of like put me in a backlog on the radio and on the magazine. But I'm almost caught up with everything, and so I'm happy to be back. Believe me, especially after losing my voice on top of all of that, which is really worse because I was really ready to go on, and then I'm like, oh man, I can't even speak. So I'm excited to be back, John. Thank you very much for putting up with me.
Well, it's great to have you back. A little nervous there. It's been a while. I've not seen you get down like that ever. So glad to have you. Glad you're back.
Yeah, I don't remember being that sick since like in the Air Force when I caught a flu in Germany, and man, I was messed up for like days. I couldn't even get out of the bed.
You were scary.
Well, the funny thing is, in this case, because pneumonia it tends to touch people in different ways, I felt physically active. So, the doctor first told me this after I went back to him a week later. I'm like, what are you talking about? I just drove here. How the hell do I have pneumonia? So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't one of those things I was confined to the bed with, but it was one of those things that constantly coughing, constantly having to blow stuff out of your nose and, all that stuff. And it's just that the monotony of all of that. It was like a 2.5 week cold. Only thing is that you could really feel it by the midday that it starts to drain on you. You get really tired and everything. So it wasn't anything I could just jet on the computer and do things or cut a show with everything. I mean, I was exhausted most of the time. It just takes a lot out of your fatigue. So I'm glad that is over with. And thanks, folks, for all your concerns. You got a lot of good well-wishing, and I really do appreciate it, and nobody thought I was, like, off the air forever or died or anything like that, so that's cool. But when you put together this kind of a regular schedule and you interrupt it, boy, I tell you, folks just think you just dropped off the earth,
it was shocking, and just like I said, we're glad to have you back.
I appreciate it. So we wanted to do a show here, of course, on various topics in writing that can be helpful to our audience, many of them who are writers. And these are three topics that we haven't covered before. So we're going to go into humor, which John really is a specialty in and runs an event/publication about humor. And then we'll talk a little bit about the pros and cons of writing every day. Are there pros and cons? Where they are? We'll talk about it because I think it's real important for what we do to understand the differences and to approach it in a way that's more personalized. You can't go around and take what Stephen King does or somebody else does and wonder, why is this not working for me? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you're not Stephen King. Okay? That could be a good reason. But we're gonna find ways that you can craft it for yourself so you could be your own Stephen King. Okay? And then the last will be markets. Where to find them, what to look for, what to do. Of course, we'll still talk about that whole fee thing because, it's always on my case. I don't like any of that nonsense. And I'm excited for the show. It's great to get something new out there. And this is episode number 45, so this is going to be great. All right, John, take it away. Tell us a little bit about humor, what you've been doing. And I know you've had some good and some bad experiences with it.
Yeah, it's this is definitely a subject near and dear to my heart, and because it's kind of what I'm definitely, one thing I'm heavily known for is my humor, and running a humorous publication under the bleachers, that whatever we do on weekends, where we just go crazy and have a good time and entertain people, that's the main thing. Yeah, humorous writing in general is one thing I'm definitely known for. And it's funny how I know I've had even quite a few editors mention to me it's something they don't seem to get a lot of, or maybe it's too difficult for, I know people have mentioned that they just wouldn't know how to go about it. And I think it's kind of strange for somebody like me who's always incorporated it. So it's just kind of natural. But then again, that's where I came from originally, doing trying to stand up for a little while. And so it's really easy for me to incorporate that into what I do. I'm a naturally.
Yeah, some people are just natural in it. Because I know you have, and a few other people have said, well, Mark, I don't know why you don't do more humor, because I find there's aspects of your show that could be humorous with you. And then sometimes I text people or email them, and they think that's funny about things. But I remind them that that's naturally who I am. But when I'm sitting down to write, I don't know how to purposely make something humorous. I'd be there all day trying to figure that out. So I just don't do it. So it's not natural for me in that format. Maybe it might be natural for me in daily life, but you know, I'm an older guy married with a couple of young kids, so if I don't have humor, I probably would have committed suicide like 10 years ago. So, but in terms of writing it, no. It's just not for me. I don't want to put that kind of time into something that, to me, is not that important to me anyway to make a humorous remark. So it's very rare. And I think I have one fiction piece that had like one humorous thing maybe in it, and that was just by accident. So I leave it to the people like you that can actually do it.
Yeah, it's not obviously. It's the funny thing is, you find out how hard it is for people to kind of go about it, and then also with starting a humorous mag. Originally, when we were kind of open for submissions, I thought, well, we'll kind of, you know, we'll kick the floodgates open there, and people will just kind of come out of the woodwork. And it didn't turn out that way. You found out that it is more of a difficult market to find in a way. To me, it's just so natural. It just goes with what I've always done. I always kind of incorporated that little twist in there to make people laugh, but it's just like, I guess it just has to be more of a truly natural thing. I do think that, like I said, for me, it's always been there in my writing, and there's a lot of writers who've always incorporated it, you know, and of course, people I admired, like Bukowski, always had that kind of dry humor. I mean, it's not just, you know, one style per se that you can have, but if you're a humorous type writer who has it, I think you just, it's something that's, it's good to have in your wheelhouse, because it's something you find it's not easy for people to write, or even they don't seem to know how to incorporate it. And to me, it's just always around you. I'm just very good at, you know, I can observe things, and that it naturally goes in there with my characters and everything else. It's just, but you find that people really have a hard time at knowing how to even start with it. I think they think you have to go over the top, and it's not that. It's really, it's knowing how to kind of find something that we all can laugh at. I really don't think about it, because I've done it for so long that it doesn't impress me that much, because it's just who I am as a person, if you know me. So it's, you know, but I just try to find that kind of just something that we all can kind of identify with. And then I put it in there, and, you know, and because a lot of times you can, if you have that humor, you can make everybody laugh. It connects, you know, laughter is good medicine.
I certainly agree on that. I don't have any problem with that at all. I know that for many writers, including myself, that have shied away from it, it's because not only is it harder to do to try to force it when you don't have a natural flow, that sort of thing, but also you're always worried about what people are going to think. Because when you write something serious and someone takes it serious, that's one thing. But when you write something humorous and you don't really mean any of that, and someone thinks you do, that becomes more of an issue than for some people. It's, to me, it's like the person that writes a horror novel and somebody reads it, they know that you throwing three children down a chimney is not really your intention in real life. You know, they know it's a damn story, But if you wrote that in like a hard rock song, they call you a devil worshiper. So it's depending on what you, where the genre is that you put this sort of thing in, it could go the wrong way real fast, especially if you don't really have a more of a natural gift for it or a real, you know, expertise into it. So it's another reason why I don't want to deal with it, because you know, you get it misinterpreted enough without having somebody take your humor in a wrong way.
It's true, and it can very much be a double-edged sword. It's I will say that, well, now, I mean, luckily, I mean, the show and various publications, you know, now I kind of, people know what to expect, so to speak, and now they actually want the humor stuff. But at first, starting out, it really did kind of become an issue, because they didn't quite know what to expect. I mean, when you come out of the blue of when everything's so kind of more dry to some of these places that you submit, and then you get all of a sudden they either really find it refreshing or it really turns them off. And a good friend of mine who's another humorous writer who always incorporates humor into his work, and I always mention him. I must be doing advertisements for him. Ryan Quinn Flanagan is another guy that, you know, he can tell you it's not. Sometimes it does become a thing where people don't know how to take it, because you submit to these places that are, you know, very much so more serious slanted, that they don't know. Sometimes because you can go in through a ton of submissions and you're serious, and you get this guy who writes about, you know, like, well, me, generally I have certain subjects. I know I like the markets that I like to, and things I know I like to touch on that are, you know, they're very commonplace for me. It's mainly people. It's like I tell stories about, but I know Ryan goes all over the place. The good buddy of mine, K.W. Perry, uses humor as well sometimes. And it's just, yeah, I think sometimes people don't know how to take it. The editors, I think, sometimes look at it and think, what's wrong with these people? You know, because people, if they don't have a sense of humor, that's another thing that they're not going to get it. There are some people that don't get it. And sometimes it can become a double-edged sword for you, because like now, of course, you know, I am more, you know, known as a good work out there, and people, you know, look for it and they expect it. So I think sometimes when I'm serious, they wonder, hey, where's the funny stuff?
Oh boy.
You know,
that's what happens in this thing when you wear so many different hats, you know.
Yeah.
You don't know which one to switch on, or sometimes the audience don't know what hat was that, you know, that he was wearing. They're like, I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. I have enough stuff to deal with rather than dealing with that too. Was Mark being funny or not? So I make it pretty clean. I'm not a funny guy, so don't worry about it.
Oh man, you have a great sense of humor. It's I think that's why I created the Humor Smack, so we just had a place that we could be totally, you know. Now I think people didn't quite know when it started, and then of course from, I think, definitely now doing the weekend, but once you, oddly enough, you were part of, so you've done humor. So
yeah,
the weekend bender thing,
I
you
guess,
did,
yeah,
but yeah,
I do it a little that I can, but you know,
was really helped us. So actually, you were part of that. So yeah, I have to remind you there. But yeah,
I just did a little something just to, you know, to not be closed-minded. But I'm not gonna lie and say I have some natural gift like John does, because I don't.
It was
If I don't do it again for 5 years, believe me, I'm okay.
No, there you go. You got that. That you could say that you have that natural humor. It was fun it's just to have an avenue where you kind of open up with that. And with that place, obviously, I don't think we have to worry about people knowing that place is a, you know, everything we do is a complete, you know, joke. We're having fun. We have fun. We pick on ourselves. But yeah, eventually sometimes people do get, you know, offended. I mean, but that just happens. I don't, you know, humor is not, like I try to tell people, art is never safe. So, you know, humor, eventually you will kind of, because you're looking at things and you're making fun of everything, but we make fun of ourselves. So eventually you will kind of hit some nerves. You don't mean to, because like I said, there are some people that just, they don't get a joke, and they take everything as that you're attacking it, and you're not, because That's another thing. If when you can make fun of yourself, you're like, well, I make fun of, we make fun of each other. Of course, we're going to laugh at other things. And it's not that we're attacking people. We're just trying to make everybody have a good time. That's what I would think is funny. If you look at these weekend things we do, these streams of content, that you, how would you ever be offended by what we do? Because you know, it's all a big joke, you know, so why would you even tune in? You know, it's not, you know,
no, you can't, you know. I hear you. And sometimes, not to our own fault, but sometimes we can be doing something that the audience generally appreciates, and then if you shift the gear for a moment over there, you might lose some of them, and you might even piss off some of them. But what are you going to do? You know, if you're trying to explore something, try to explore something. I always tell people, no one's shoving anything at you, so you can skip over something. It's just like, you know, my journal, aerial chart. You know, there's no way you're going to read 50 poems and say, I like them all. No. So there might be something like, oh, I'm not into this, or I'm not going for that. And that's fine. It's not supposed to be there. Every single one of them is not supposed to ring a bell. But they're going to ring somebody's bell. It's just not going to ring everyone's. And that's how it's supposed to be anyway. So I always thought that with your humor especially, if they see what's going on with us under the bleachers, they should already know this is the land of humor. This is not the same thing as, you know, rye whiskey, you know? And I don't know how you would think that the two are the same. At least you're just not really paying attention, because it's really that simple.
Yeah. It's a niche. I would say it is a niche market, and it's just something I do really well. So for me and people like Ryan and definitely Kevin and of course our buddy Scott, it's a place where we can kind of cut loose as humorous writers, that we can just completely, you know, go off the rails and have a lot of fun and entertain. And that's the main thing with humor. I like to entertain in my work. I like to, you know, take somebody, maybe have a bad day, and just give them a laugh. And I think we do that very well. So overall, I have not had many complaints. You know, if you got 100 people that like something, the one person that dislikes it, you know, I mean, sorry that you got offended, but we didn't charge you nothing for admitting. So
that's right.
No refund. You got what you
paid for.
Exactly. So yeah, it is funny with the humor, but it is funny how you will see people now who probably would never even try doing humorous work, but they're like, well, okay, we're going to go for it. And then you really, and this is not a knock against me, but you do realize that some people, yeah, it's not, when it's not natural to them, I realize it's not, yeah. You have to look and think, and I admire anybody trying, but it's not that easy. You have to know how to do it really well and to connect. And I realize it is hard to do, but it's something that I've been doing all my life. I've been a person that's always been a joker, so to speak. So, you know, it's more natural for me to crack a joke with somebody than it is to, you know, to not. So I do realize that it's not easy to do, but, you know, it's fun to try, and it's kind of learning how to craft it is difficult, but you just have to fire it out there and try, you know.
Well, I applaud you, and I'm glad we got this subject on the show, because, you know, we've had so many different, you know, genres, subgenres of writing. We really haven't done much about humor. Yeah. And most people are going to be on the outside of this, including me. So don't feel weird, guys out there and girls out there. But at the same point, you know, not everybody's humor is going to be the same. And maybe you're just not into what he's doing, or maybe there's a couple of things you might like, or maybe you just want to stick straight to this being serious, and he has other stuff along that line as well, including some of his books. So, although there's some humor in them too, but not as much as you know, Under the Bleachers, and that's fine. We have to all figure out, I think, the various, if you can call ourselves houses, and each house has maybe three or five or four rooms. Each one of them are decorated differently. That's how a lot of artists are sometimes. And sometimes they don't want to stay in one room. Maybe they want to switch around to another room. It's more comfortable.
Yeah.
It gives another another mental muscle that they can exercise, or maybe some other curiosity they can explore. And that's how creative people tend to be. They don't always tend to be in one thing. I mean, I meet a few people that are, and that's fine. Because you can always say, yeah, that's the dude that writes about gay zombies, you know? Okay, that's his thing, you know? And that's fine. And that's fine, yeah. But, I mean, you might have other people.
Big market there, I'm sure.
there could be. You never know. But you have some people that want to go, you know, four and five and six different directions. And that's a well, too, because that's a good way for them to keep themselves fresh, so to speak. And I don't have any problem with that. I think humor is another way of doing that. But, you know, it's... I don't think anything is on you or anyone that's doing that, because when I look at it, I never see anything that's remotely offensive. You can see it a mile away that it's something that's a joke. You know what I mean? That it's absurd, that it's absurd, that it's supposed to be a bit out there. You know, but we live in these kind of times right now where everybody has to get sensitive about something. We got too many people out there that they think the only way they can get attention is to be a victim of something. You know? My leg don't work. My eye is failing me. I don't breathe too well. You know, I can't remember because I've been on drugs for 98 years. I mean, whatever. Instead of just being who they are or trying to create something different and new, they figure that's the only way to get attention. And we got a lot of people that do this ways. They do this because I don't know why. I'm thinking it's just because of the fact that they don't know any other way to get attention, and that's what they do. Sometimes they exploit people from it. Sometimes they just miserably depress people. Then this is what they do. But we have such a big part of that in society right now. It don't take much for somebody to get offended. You know, I've gotten used to it over the time, though. I'm like, whatever. I don't pay too much of attention to it.
Yeah,
because you're not going to find too many people that are out there that are deliberately trying to offend people. There's very few of those people out there. Most of the time, this crap happens by accident, and usually the person offended is not really offended. It's just a way to bring themselves attention. I don't know. It's like 15-minute model of victimization. I'm a victim for 15 minutes. Okay. You're done now. It's like 15 and a half minutes. Quiet.
We're so over the top that I don't think you get that. I was surprised, but that we didn't get more because we're so it'd be like if you tuned into Saturday Night Live and thought you were getting the evening news.
Right.
You know, you're not. That's not what we are, and clearly we're not marketed as that. We even give a disclaimer. So I mean, there's no way that somebody can. You know, I think that's the problem is people are too scared to laugh at the things around us. And we're not even, we don't even pick on, we don't go with political, we don't go after religion. So, you know, we're so over the top in that, you can't really be, you can be. I mean, like I said, there's always people, like you say, you're going to find something that want to kind of be, they want to get attention. So that's very easy to do. But with us, people kind of look like, really? You know, and it's just, once again, and of course, it is like a very thing. Like, if you look into my books, that's a smaller element. I do use the humor in there, but not to the degree that it is with Under the Bleachers. And that's just where we can open up and have a good time and entertain. And it is something unique, and it's just really fun to do. So, and there's a lot of people that are digging it. So that's all that matters to me, you know, because it's not anything. We're not intentionally ever trying to attack people or anything like that. It's not what we're about. We're about having a good time. Let's have a good time. It's a little party, you know, that's the way it goes.
And I agree. And I have children. So as they're getting older, I have to teach them certain things. And one of the things I teach them, not as a cliche, just as a fundamental truth of life, is that whenever they're doing something, whether they're telling the joke or doing a class presentation or they're out there, you know, on the soccer field or whatever, they're not going to catch everybody's attention. Not everybody's going to clap for them. Not everybody's going to be interested or exciting in what they're saying and what they're doing, which is just another way of reminding them that you cannot please everyone. I don't mean that as a stupid cliche. To me, it's not a license to be a jerk just because you can't please everybody. That's not what I'm saying at all, and I don't believe that way. I just know that's the truth. It's just not possible because people are just so different, and they just might not really connect with you. So, and that you have to live with that because the people that spend the time trying to make 100% everybody's happy, those people are 100% miserable. They probably jump off the roof in a couple of years. You know, I often wonder, people who commit suicide, some of the reasons they do that is because they spent too much energy on idiots that really didn't care about them anyway.
Oh, that's a very good point.
So you got to remember that in art especially. You can't, you know?
Yeah.
I know no. From your own standpoint, you know, you probably say to yourself, yeah, I'm going to get some people with this bleacher stuff, and then other people were like, no, I'm just going to hang out with his rye stuff. And that's fine, too, because that's just an acknowledgement that what you're doing might be for a different crowd, and that's fine. No one says it has to be for the same crowd, or everybody has to clap their hands and jump up and say, he's the Shakespeare of humor. You know what I mean, you're just trying to have fun.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't think anybody's ever going to call me that, but yeah, it's completely true, and that's a thing. But that's another thing that I will say, especially with like the whiskey. I'm glad I'm doing two things that are completely different, and they have completely two different audiences, really. And I think Under the Bleachers now has just found it, is finding its, you know, true audience. But it, like I said, it's more like if you're not, it'd be like if you're comparing, you know, TV shows, you've got something that's more definitely a, although we do put humor in there, but you've got the whiskey that's completely more serious. And then, of course, you've got, you know, UTB Under the Bleachers. That is, like I said, it'd be like, it's like looking at Saturday Night Live or something. That would be a good comparative to it. Or Animal House, watching Animal House when you want to be watching a drama. That's not that. You know, if you go over there looking for that, then you're going to be really disappointed. And I think it's definitely good. I think it's something unique. It's something that didn't exist in our scene. Even some places that claim they have humor that don't, you know, there's just nothing like it, really. There is no other mag that's completely humor 100%. So that's, you know, it is unique. But then again, like I said, it's a niche thing, and it's found.
And I bet you there's a lot of people that say, I'm glad that John's doing this because I don't know if I want to venture out and do it because of the way people act about things. Because it probably makes people nervous just trying to do something like that, because you don't know what you're going to get. And now with Facebook even getting sensitive about stuff, I mean, I don't know if you heard today, they just banned the cover of the House of Holies from Led Zeppelin, saying that naked children is not part of their values anymore.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because like I said, first and foremost, I'm a humorous writer, but I also was a comedian. So it's like, to me, this is like, you know, it's First Amendment stuff. It's just, it's art, you know, it's not, it doesn't all have to be this cookie cutter type formulaic thing, you know, and humor is very much, I mean, and there, if you look way, way back where you saw when comedians were on trial, like Lenny Bruce, I mean, it's ridiculous that things that are clearly humorous should offend people so greatly. I think we're getting a little ridiculous now.
Well,
with censorship.
The reason why we're getting towards censorship at times, and the reason why we're doing this is because there isn't any real clear thought about scanning something on a case-by-case basis, okay? I don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem if Facebook wants to say to its customers, listen, we're going to go through the images that have been putting on there, and we're going to find things that we truly think are offensive and take those off. Rather than every time they see something that's partially naked, let's just remove it. Because there's nothing there's nothing sexually exciting or pornographic about those two naked kids on that album. It's been on for over 30 years. It's just art. But, you know, maybe somebody else, if they did that in a modern setting, it could be some weird stuff there. And that's how you go case by case. But what happens is oftentimes for people to say on a marketing basis, we're doing something, they just get lazy and they just cutting onto everything. That's how they do things. It's just like our security at the airport. Really? You're going to put your fist underneath an old lady's skirt to see if she has a bomb under there? Really? She's a profile of a terrorist? You know what I mean? The old guy, he has to take off his shoe with all his diabetic equipment on there, so make sure he doesn't have an explosive in there. I mean, come on.
This
that's the kind of lazy stupidness you get. versus case by case. The 79-year-old nun, she doesn't really fit the terror profile. We'll let her go. I mean, come on.
Let's be serious.
Okay? You're a young guy. You're a young guy with a 77-inch beard. Yeah, maybe they might want to check you. That sounds right. It's just some of it's just common sense. It has nothing to do with anything other than common sense. But when you get lazy and you want to try to tell the public we're doing something, yeah, we're doing something. We're halfway putting our arm up some old lady's skirt to see if there's a bomb up there. That's offensive.
Yeah. It's kind of like it's overcompensating for things, unfortunately.
If I was sitting next to that person and that was my grandmother, I'd be in jail because I'd be kicking about three guys in the ass right there.
It's closing the barn door after the horse got out.
This is the kind of moral and intellectual laziness that causes censorship in the first place. That's what it does.
Yeah.
Because they won't go case by case because, God forbid, that's too much work or, it's not fast enough and this and that. And then for the sake of expediency, this is what happens. You harm people more than you help them then, Because I don't know why that lady wants to jump on a plane anytime soon when she keeps thinking about guys with their arms up her skirt. I mean, come on. And it doesn't feel any better for her if they're like, oh, we'll have a woman do it. No, it's not any better, dummy.
No, it's the like you said. I mean, especially when in the case with the Zeppelin cover, something that's been out there in the public for a very long time. Now you're going to get offended by it.
Yep.
And it's not even, there's nothing offensive with it. It's art.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I know. And I do not like censorship. So I know that I'll definitely get in trouble somewhere down the line. We've had a couple of things that were automatically, Facebook's kind of strange. It kind of blocks right away that we try to upload. I mean, we've gotten trouble. So, and I'm sure we will again. But then again, I'm not going to back off. And because what we're doing, I know where we're coming from. And I think people generally know when they get my humor where I'm coming from. So, no, it's ridiculous. And I cannot stand censorship on almost any level. So, yeah, not everything's supposed to be safe.
Well, I definitely appreciate you bringing up this subject because it's something we haven't done before, which is always exciting to do something new. And maybe just let people hear about this. And maybe they'll learn something from it and laugh at it and laugh at themselves about it, not to take it too seriously. It might actually open up a few eyes and a few minds.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's the case. Let's go on to something that's definitely more near and dear to my heart is the subject of writing every day and the pros and cons of that. Now, folks, for those who write on a regular basis, let me put this to you straight and plain. There's no rule out there on how you're supposed to be writing in terms of the frequency, okay? So that means that in 7 days in the week, if you only wrote 3 days this week, that doesn't mean that you've had 4 days of being a lonely, lazy loser, okay? That's not the case. And that's the problem with a lot of this. I need to write everything right now and hurry up because otherwise I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And no, you're not supposed to do that. You're going to have some days where you're coming up with some ideas that are not forming up into art yet or even into a piece. Those are your days, you call them notes. Be happy you wrote some stuff down for notes and go about your day. It just might not be a day to really be inspired to create anything new yet. And then you have other days that you think you're doing the notes and next thing you know it all clicks in and boom, you're off and running. That piece might not be ready yet, but you've got something real now that you could start, crafting on here and there. But there isn't any rule to that. And the people who get stuck with what I always laugh as a Stephen King method. I got to type 1,500 words a day. If I don't, I'm not going to. But that doesn't mean anything, okay? That's just silliness. That's something that Stephen King put out there because that's just the way he does things. He doesn't mind writing 20,000 words and maybe only like 1,000 he keeps. He doesn't mind that. To him, because he overwrites anyway. That's his style. That's just what he does because he thinks in storylines. and he thinks in characterizations. He doesn't think in clever dialogue and cool ideas. Because if you ever look at any of his novels, he doesn't have a lot of clever dialogue. Because he's just a big McDonald's overwriting kind of guy. That's what he does. That's why he's the McDonald's of writers. You know, you go over there, you expect what you're going to expect, and that's it. And you're going to get that, okay? All right? No one is accusing McDonald's of being a great steakhouse, all right? They know what it is. It's just like Stephen King. But that's his style. That's what he does. You're not going to be able to do that. For some people, they can't afford to write 10,000 words in a week and get rid of most of it. They feel like they've done nothing. And guess what? You have done nothing. That's why you should never use that method. It's a crazy method. It doesn't work for most people at all.
No.
It's a complete waste. Because guess what?
No.
If you wrote 1,500 words for like even 3 days straight, if it's just a bunch of words and you're just typing some stuff, you haven't done any writing for 3 days. You know what you've done? You've done typing for 3 days.
Typing.
Yeah, that's cool. My son can type too. It doesn't mean a novel's going to come out of that crap anytime soon. And that's the whole point there. Why? That's truly a waste of time. I got 4,500 words here, man. I'm really going to something. Really, what are you on to?
Wow.
What? Your character is in the attic, you know, playing with himself for 3 days. Is that really something useful? Come on. So that's why you have to keep that in mind. It's not a good idea to force yourself to write. Now, it's not a bad idea to have some kind of regular habit, even if you want to call it a daily one, where I got a couple titles I think I like to write down in my little logbook over here. I like to put a couple cool lines I think could work, but I'm not sure where they're going to go yet. Here's some notes on something I want to write about. I feel like writing about a dragon lizard that bites my my mother-in-law in the butt. That sounds cool. I'll put that in there. That's fine. But you can't think that somehow your writing and whatever gift you have is a light switch and that, on Tuesday at 3 p.m., I got about an hour. I think I'm going to turn it on then. No, it doesn't work that way, folks.
Yeah.
Inspiration, which is the foundation of all writing, is a confluence of various events. It could be the way your mood had settled that day, the way some words have come together. It could be those days of notes they're starting to finally assemble in your head. It could just be a bolt of lightning for a moment. All of those things can happen or none of them can happen, but they're not going to happen on command, and they're certainly not going to happen just because you want them to happen. That doesn't work that way, and that's why a lot of writers fail, many because I'm not getting things done fast enough. This isn't working out the way I wanted to. I thought I'd sit down here and blah, blah, blah. They confuse grammar with writing. They confuse typing with writing. They confuse dreaming with writing. Folks, writing is work. And if you know anything about work, work is often not fun. You feel a sense of accomplishment when it's over with, and then some days you don't. But that's work. And that's what art is. Art is work. All right, so some art teacher told you this was a lot of fun. Well, she's probably saying that because she's making $55,000 a year talking to a bunch of imbeciles for a couple hours a day about blah, blah, blah. She don't have to do anything real. She'll just tell you about a couple of theories and a couple of cool dudes. One guy cut off his ear. The other guy beats his girlfriends. Oh, yeah, great, thanks. And she gets to go home. She didn't commit art. She's just teaching. So
yeah. It's
probably fun for her, but I don't know how much fun that is for you. So you just got to keep that in mind, okay? Every day, you got to find different variations of it. You're not going to always be on point every day. You might have times where you are. You might have times where you're just on fire for a couple of days, hell, even a week or so. But it doesn't last, folks. It's like that girl you first see, and you're like, oh, my God, I love her on Monday. You know, by Thursday, you're looking to escape out the fire escape in the back because you're like, oh, my God, what happened? Well, what happened was the love wore away, and now you're like, you got to run for the hills, okay?
Mm.
It's just like same thing with writing. Inspiration, it comes and it goes. You just got to be able to be ready when it does come, and you know, write it to wherever you can, and then work on it from there.
Yeah.
Most writing is just editing anyway.
Yeah, I know we do that enough, and then, you know, before we go on with that stuff, you know, I do want to point out my name is John Patrick Robbins, because when all the Stephen King fans decide to get the pitchforks and don't come after me. Because, you know, I've heard he has a couple fans.
Yeah,
so
I'm sure he does, and I'm not mocking him, but I remind people, because he was one of the first people to come up with this is the style that's good for you and blah blah blah, and it's like, I don't really think he meant in his heart that because I'm doing it this way, you could do it this way, and that's the only way, and it's going to work for you, because it doesn't. I haven't found a single person in 34 years of writing that did that 1,500 words a day crap and made anything out of it.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Definitely not me.
Yeah.
I don't think you can't. I know that a lot of people do kind of freak out if they don't write every day, or like, to me, I'm like the polar opposite. I wait for it to come, you know, instead of, thinking, oh, if I don't write this down, then I'll forget it. See, to me, if it's worth anything, it'll stay with you. And it does for me. I'll have a title and I'll be walking around for days. It's amazing I can remember these things. But I'll always, you know, I don't know how the ink. I work everything out in my head. So I don't really, I'm one of those that do not believe in writing every day. Because if I'm having a day where it's not happening, then I'm just forcing it. It's a bunch of just, you know, for in it, especially what I do too. It's like, yeah, it's not, it wouldn't be sincere and it wouldn't be entertaining if you're just forcing it. It's not a factory job, you know, that we're not clocking in, clocking out. It's work. It really is work. But no, I don't believe you can just force everything. And I also don't think there's any set pattern for anybody. We all do things different.
Yeah,
you know,
there really isn't. Not at all.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I always tell people, you have to discover it on your own. What works for you, because you're completely different than John and Mark and other people. And Stephen King as well. You're different than all of these people. So you can't do that, because you're going to wind up getting yourself into a trap where you're wasting your time. And then some people, they wind up giving up. And it wasn't because they didn't have any talent or because they didn't have any discipline. It's because they had the wrong expectations. They're doing some phony formula that's not going to do it for them. I mean, sometimes you have to apply some of the commonsensical things that you learn from life into writing. And one of the things we're saying on this show, John said it just as well as I did, is if you're forcing it, it's not going to work. Right, you can't go on a date with somebody and then force fake it. You eventually realize this is not going to work out. It's the same thing with writing. If you're forcing it, you're like, I'm in with this person 15 minutes. I can't wait to finish these meatballs and drop her off, you know? I'm done, you know? And it's the same thing with writing. You try to force it and you're just sitting there. And you're going to bore yourself to death. You're going to stress yourself out. And more important, and that's why I really counsel people against these false formulas, is you start doubting your own talent and your own ideas and your own existence as a writer or artist by doing stuff like that. Because you're going to get a false sense of, oh, crap, I don't know anything, so I must not be a good writer. Really? That's right. You don't know crap on Tuesday, but Wednesday you could be brilliant. That's what you got to keep in mind. But if you have people in these stupid formula things, forget it. So avoid that. If you want to make some kind of a habit, like I said, make some kind of, and I've talked about this on another show before, but make a creative habit where you're picking something out of your tool belt, you know? I don't got anything going on new today, but hell, I could work on something from before and see if I can edit it and polish it a little bit better. Or I got a couple of notes I could write in there that could be interesting. Even writing down notes could go on for a while. Could go on for a page or something of just notes that could be useful. That's the kind of stuff you can do.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. But having these arbitrary numbers, I got to do 750 words here. I got to do 1,500 words.
Mm-hmm.
I had one lady telling me she I did 5,000 words this weekend. Yeah. If most of those meant something, I'm like, hell yeah, that's an accomplishment. But I guarantee that they didn't mean much of anything.
Yeah, it's not. There is no formula.
If you're telling people you did 5,000 words, you're really telling them that maybe six of them are good and the rest of them, you know, you're going to flush down the toilet bowl, you know, with the kid's diaper, you know? Come on.
Yeah.
Because if you're mentioning those numbers, there's something wrong right away there. Because you would be saying something like this weekend, man, I got some real stuff done and I feel pretty good about it. That's what you would say. You wouldn't be mentioning numbers. You're mentioning numbers because you're just trying to convince yourself that the weekend you threw away from not hanging out with your family and friends was worth something when it wasn't worth anything. You should have just went to the movie with them and shut up.
Yeah, it is not. There's no formula and you gotta, I don't know. I think this is not like a race. That's another thing. It's not a competitive. Well, it is competitive to a degree when you look at markets and everything that we're going to go into, but it's not a race. Take time and make something, you know, craft it. Don't just, you know, just seeing how many things you can get done at once. I mean, that's amazing. If you're really good and really productive like that, I know guys that are like, they do that. They got work out all the time. And you got, you know, I mean, we all work different. However it works for you, embrace it and don't, it's got to be natural. You got to kind of find your own rhythm. This is not, it's just completely something that's art. And if you want to be good at anything, it's and stand out, then be you. That's the best thing you can do with anything.
You're completely correct. And I think, you really strike a big foundational point on why people like these phony formulas and this everyday nonsense. And I think they do is because they're impatient. And that impatience is going to destroy the things you want to do right. It takes time. Like anything that's worthwhile is going to take some time to do. You know?
Yeah.
Even if somehow you manage to complete a decent-sized novel, let's say in 6 months, it doesn't mean it's good because you still have to go through it all. Edit this, go through that. Hell, it could take you months just doing that. So nothing's really done, so why rush it? And I think the impatience, it's part of of the kind of society we have today where everything tends to be very disposable, you know, very quick, and folks think they could do it that way, but you can't. You're going to harm yourself, you're going to harm what you're doing, and in the end, you're going to find out that you wasted a lot of your time, and it's not a good idea. It really isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's patience is a really good thing that you're going to have in this life. So.
And I'm not telling people they have to have patience all the time. Who the heck does? Mm-hmm. I don't either. I mean, but I'm not going to rush stuff like that. You know, and I've learned all the time to have some. And it takes a little time to learn and do. But you got to start working on doing that. And part of, if you want to call it forcing patience, if you want to force anything, it is sometimes putting the pen down rather than picking it up. That's not a bad thing. It gives you some things to think about. Eventually, you'll learn to put things in your head better. I do that a lot. It's part of how I do things. I don't do as many notes as I used to do in the past because I'm able to mentally keep up with them now. But I wasn't able to do that in the past, and I put down some notes. So just keep that in mind, folks. Don't fall for any formula because there really isn't any such thing. You can develop your own personalized habits about how you want to conduct yourself and what you want to do, and nothing wrong with that. You'll find out your strengths and weaknesses that way. But those are going to be yours. And I'm not saying that you can't share them with people. I share mine. I've shared others with people on the show before. There's nothing wrong with that, but not everybody's going to pick that up. They might like something that might be familiar to them. It could be even the same, but that's not like someone's going to say, I'm going to do what John does because it works for me. It's probably not because you're not John. You're not Mark. You know?
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind. Don't self-sabotage yourself, okay? Just keep this in mind. You already have the world out there that's against you and they hate you. Why add any more to that, okay? Please.
No. Doesn't work for me much. Trying to write like me, well, it doesn't work for me most of the times either.
See? There you go.
You know.
And he's him.
Yeah. I'm a great example. Don't go by me just because you're seeing the finished product out there and you see these bags out there. It's like, no, because I get rejections too. So I just don't list those. My list is far bigger. So, yeah.
All right, folks. And the last segment we got today on the show is markets.
Mm-hmm.
There are places to find markets all over. I mean, you could just put, you know, seeking poetry, seeking short fiction, market list, and still words like that, just in Google and find things. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you're interested and you use Submittable on a regular basis, and I do, it's part of my retropart amongst all other markets. There's an area now called Discovering It, and when you hit the Discover, you can actually tailor a search pattern to what you want. I want markets that are coming up in the next 6 months that are poetry and that don't have a fee. Because some stuff in Submittable has a fee. A lot of places want $3 to $5 just for you to submit something. It's crazy. I avoid that nonsense. That's a personal decision for you folks. I think it's just a scam to do that. But you could put that in as Submittable, and you're going to get like 10, 20, 30, 40 places that have no fee. So you can actually use Submittable to find places. There's still a lot of places out there that don't require it. There's also a lot of contests that don't require it either. Because I feel the same way about contests as I do about markets that require money. I'm always suspicious of them because I always notice the winners list. They look like the same kind of people as the judges. So the judges are picking the same kind of people. Probably not picking you because you're not like the judge. But you're paying them all to do all that. So, you know. If someone's going to slap you in the face, don't pay them to do it, okay? That's my advice on that. Now, that's one place to find it. There's a site called MovieBytes.com, and in there you could find places where you could send a screenplays to for free, and you can also find a lot of places where you can send your plays to get either produced or published or, you know, they do a stage reading, whatever, but they have those on there as well. There are so many different places to do so. Another one is called newpages.com. They have a lot more of the independent, very artistic journals and some of the academic ones as well, but they have a lot of good places. A lot of them don't require a fee at all. And they'll tell you right there if they do or not. They'll mention it in the listings. So you'll always be able to see that.
Yeah.
If you subscribe for free to Submittable, they'll actually send you every single week a short list of all the new stuff that's coming out on Submittable that you can send your work to. Poetry, nonfiction, fiction. It'll be a mixed bag. Some of it will be that you'll have to pay a fee, which I don't, and I'll skip those, and others you don't. You know, so you could do your own search on there and just get everything on. You know, no fee, or you can let them send the email to you, and you kind of get a little mixed bag over there. But there are plenty of other places as well. Just keep in mind that as much as possible, just do some basic research on the market. I'm not saying you need to spend 3 days on it, okay? But it doesn't take but a couple minutes for you to check out a market to be able to see that it doesn't fit you. I mean, the market says, we only want gay black people. Well, unless you're gay and black, it's not for you. So why waste your time and their time? You'll see some that say, we usually take everybody, but for this quarter or for this season or even for this month, we only want women. Well, if you're not a woman, not a good idea. They might just want a theme. Maybe the theme is, you know, rocking chairs, you know, in rural America, whatever the hell. Okay. Got something, you might even be able to create something for it. Cool. That's a cool project, maybe to stretch your wings out a little bit and give it a try. Or you're like, I don't have any rocking chair poems and I don't give a damn next.
Well.
You know, but
yeah, that's definitely another thing that you, besides finding markets, is knowing your markets as your own, you know, because you are your own marketer. So, you know, that's knowing the places that your work fits
as much as possible, because folks, they'll tell you sometimes in the preamble of the introduction for the guidelines on magazines, we think you should read a couple of our, you know, past issues to kind of know. I'm sure they think that, but to me, that's a bunch of autistic hogwash. Okay, because I'm telling you something. I've never read a magazine that said, "Yeah, I think my stuff's gonna fit in there," or "No, I don't think it will." It's hard to tell. How the hell do you tell, really?
Yeah.
Are you supposed to have a poem that's similar to those other poems? You probably don't. So it makes no sense.
Yeah.
You know? I've gotten published plenty of times with stuff that had nothing to do with any of the stuff they were publishing. So that crap about read their magazine, I don't see how that really helps. I just don't. I'm not saying don't do it.
Yeah.
If you still want to, because that's what the advice of the editor is, do it. But I haven't found it to be helpful.
Yeah, it's some degrees it really isn't, because you never know. I do kind of look at the work that they publish. I am one of those. And but another thing is that gets aggravating is being on the opposite side of it, being the editor. Like when you, like of course, like I run under Bleachers, but now, you know, and we're not even open for submissions, but then people submitting and then they don't even pay attention to the fact that you're doing humor, and then they send you stuff that's like, really, you know. So that, to me, sometimes you have to, you know, at least check out the guidelines.
Yeah,
would be nice.
At least do that, and you know, you can tell. I mean, the only time I ever found reading a magazine for a little while was helpful is those ones that say they want some rough and ready stuff. Or those, I mean, because then I want to see what they want. Because then I'll really know if I have some rough stuff, which I do sometimes, that could fit in there. You know what I mean? But if you're telling me you want piranha poetry, and I read your magazine, and all I see is poodle poetry, and then I know you don't know what the hell tough is anyway. So sometimes reading it, you actually will find out, you know, I think this is not going to work for me, because these people are lame. So sometimes that will help. But in terms of it always helping? No, it doesn't always help at all. I find more times than not, it doesn't. But it doesn't hurt. But really, the guidelines are a big thing. You can often tell from some of the stuff they're asking for. And I don't mean the specific stuff, like you have to be a one-legged, you know, lesbian nun or something to send something to. But what I mean is just when they have certain things they're saying, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we like more beat poetry in the Bukowski kind of style or something like that. That might not be for you. I might just tell you right there. You know what I mean? Or they'll say something like, you know, we want more deeply involved poetry, that less than 50 lines. You know, then you got to think about yourself. Which ones are going to probably fit that? Because I might not have too many that do. You know, some right now are doing the micro poetry thing where they're literally saying, I got to have something under 25 lines. You know, things like that. So it really helps to read that, because that more than anything else is kind of giving you an idea if it's worth, you know, sending to the market. Then you can go reading into it further if you feel you have to. But don't forget, you have a lot of markets out there. You can't go too deep into every one of them on looking into stuff. Sometimes all you could do is read the guidelines and then make a choice, you know. But again, just like that whole writing every day thing, there's no formula here, folks. There's no guaranteed method for you submitting stuff to a market that's going to increase your chances, other than just sending something that shouldn't be sent. You know? They want women's stuff, you're a guy. That's just stupid. You're not going to get picked up. You know?
Yeah.
They got a queer issue. You're not queer. I mean, it's dumb. Don't do it. So, other than that, there is no real formula. You're going to take chances like anything else.
Yeah, sometimes there are some people that they don't quite get it. I think they want to get in everywhere, and that's another thing, like I said, is knowing where you fit. And I think that's just with any kind of experience. You know, like, I mean, when that's kind of, I don't know how to put it, but an early writer mistake, because I know when I was starting out, I was sending, that's when we were mailing stuff off.
Yeah.
Stuff off that was, you know, I didn't have a clue, because I wasn't even on the net. That's, I know young people find that crazy, but it's so you I really didn't know the places that I was sending to. And of course, I was getting a vast majority of rejections because, I mean, well, number one, I was just starting out. And number two, I had really no clue. I wasn't reading past issues or anything like that. I just saw the guidelines and thought, well, they're taking poetry. You know, I bought a Poets Market and just started sending everywhere.
Well, back when you were doing the mailing, all you could do oftentimes is just the guidelines, because it really wasn't practical to pick 10 markets and then buy one of the sample issues, wait for it to come a couple of weeks, read it. It's just not practical at all. I mean, at that point, you know, you'd be sending out 5 poems every 3 months. You might as well just forget it, because it is a numbers game about sending stuff out. So sometimes you got to take a chance. You got to have a risk. You just got to be smart about it and respectful. You know, an editor might say, geez, I wish you didn't send this. This is not really fitting us. That's fine. But you didn't go around breaking on the rules to do it. As long as you're not breaking a bunch of rules on purpose, you know, no one says you just can't send something out and take a chance that somebody might like it.
It never hurts to try. I mean, if you think, you know, I mean, I know there's plenty of places that I've tried, didn't even really think I would get in. And, you know, oddly enough, it was something unique. And yeah, so there's nothing wrong with that. But when it is really specific, that, you know, they're not looking for what you're doing. Yeah, it's best to kind of use some restraint, because it's great to be published, but, you know, it's also important to be published in places you're going to fit. You know, and that suit you. You know, that's another thing.
Just keep this in mind, writers, as well. Okay, a lot of these risks that you're going to take, and a lot of these chances that you make, they are not always your fault, because sometimes magazines, they give very vague guidelines. Like an aerial chart, I'm pretty specific about what I'm looking for, what I'm not looking for, and how I like you to present it to me. I try not to get too carried away, but it's often really difficult to not know what I'm trying to do there. Plus, you can always check the magazine out for free and kind of get an idea as much as possible, you know, as well. But I try to make sure that the person has a lot of information, you know, on front. I mean, I tell people straight out, don't send me no Batman poem, okay? Okay? You like R2-D2? That's cool. I don't want him in aerial charter, though. He's a cute robot. God bless him, but I don't want him on here, okay? All right? You like Chewbacca? That's great. I don't think a Chewbacca poem is going to really work for me.
So I make sure
people kind of get an understanding of that, you know? And part of the reason I do that is not because I dislike those things. I think it'd be cool to have a Chewbacca poem, believe it or not. But the funny thing is that people they start following patterns. The one person I produce about a UFO poem or alien poem, I'm telling you, the next month I'm going to get 10,000 alien poems. Next thing you know, I mean, it'll be alien chart instead of aerial chart, you know?
Yeah.
That's the problem when you go, in those kind of genres or those kind of, sub-genres, you know what I mean? The first Batman poem you take, it won't be your last that you're going to get. But he did something different. Here's my different Batman poem. So I just have to just eliminate all that stuff, because it's just not going to work out, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of, that is bad when we take it. I think I'm known for, sometimes you do take those risks, and then sometimes you go with stuff, and then you will see that people say, oh, that's the kind of stuff you're looking for.
Right, exactly. They'll read to 3 or 4 months issues. The moment they see that Batman poem back from February, that's what they're going to send you. Oh, my God, maybe they'll take a Superman one. No.
Yeah.
I don't mind those things. I wouldn't mind every so often issue to put something weird like that in there. But I know people, they'll just take it the wrong way, and that'll be it. I'll be getting that forever.
Yep.
And then they're like, they'll keep pointing, well, what'd you do that one for? And then the next thing you know, I'm over here explaining myself every half a day. That's not what I'm here to do. So sometimes you just have to ban all that crap. That's all you can do. You know?
Yeah.
I don't have much. I don't have too much subjects I ban, really. I mean, people can write what they want to write, as long as it's not purposely, you know, blasphemous or bigoted. But you just other stuff. I don't have a choice. I wish, but there's just no way around it.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's it's the truth. We kind of, you know. Then again, like yeah, if you have the Chewbacca poem, send it over my way because you never know what I'll take.
you heard it here first. Rye review. Rye whiskey review.
Yeah, no. Send that to the, under the bleachers.
Send it under the bleachers then. Okay.
We're definitely known for being a little bit crazy, yeah. So you can probably get away with it there.
He'll do the Chewbacca poem with Chewbacca secretly had a crush on Han Solo, and when Han Solo died, Chewbacca was like, I can't live anymore. Great.
Yeah, there you go. Well, this is definitely a subject that kind of went different.
Because that's the kind of crazy stuff you did. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I already got some of these things, even though I don't want them. I get them every so often. Gay alien poems. What was it? the Bigfoot that can heal you if he could just live in your house. I mean, crazy stuff. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Wow. I mean, that's unique. I've had some weird dimensions. That takes cake.
This Bigfoot is 9 foot tall, so he can't even physically fit in somebody's house. And he's supposed to somehow sit in their living room, touch the daughter, and it's going to magically heal it. But it smells like rotten eggs, and it's a weirdo. I mean, it doesn't make no sense at all. You got me.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, come on. Huh?
That's fun. Yeah. I love reading that guy's stuff.
Dr. Bigfoot. What the hell is next? So, they go out there with this stuff. Yeah, I'm telling you, I wouldn't even have a literary magazine anymore. You might as well just turn into a humor magazine at that point. It's like,
don't be starting competition.
Yeah. What the hell? Hey, man, I heard you had a gay poem and Dr. Bigfoot. What's up with that, man?
Aerial chart's really going downhill.
Can you take my poem about the Loch Ness Monster that likes iTunes? No.
No. Yeah, definitely. Not read the guy Loch Ness. And probably, go ahead, it is free, so go ahead and check out some rights there. You'll see a lot of diversity.
All right, folks, we want to get this wrapped up. Let's just do a little recap here over here. We talked about humor, how it's not the same thing as something that's serious, and that oftentimes maybe it's hard to take humor if you're not humorous yourself. And that's fine. No one says you have to be. But it would be nice to know the difference, okay? All right, writing every day. Some people say there's a pro and there's a con. I say mostly, and so did John too, that it was mostly con. The only pros is that if you're using it to try to learn more about yourself and your style and what you want to do, maybe it's not a bad idea. But as you grow as a writer, you'll find that, hey, not every day is going to suit you to write. There's going to be times when you don't feel. I remember someone telling me, it doesn't matter if I feel I want to write or not, I'm still going to write. Okay, well. See the difference between when you feel and when you don't feel. You notice there's a quality difference, okay? So, and that's what you want to do. You want to try to stay to some quality because, you know, writing is like any other task. You know, if you don't want to try to get some quality out of the quantity of time you're using, I swear you could just go watch a TV show, go play tennis, or go hang out with, your in-laws or something because you get more out of that than doing that. Remember, every time you write, you're taking time away from activities, from the world, from nature, from your family, from your loved ones. Make it worthwhile. Just don't do it for the hell of it. What were you doing? I don't know. Screwing off for 2 hours. I got like 3 words in. That wasn't a good time for you. So keep that in mind. Writing every day, not always a productive and intelligent thing to do. And then, of course, last is markets. All right? Markets are important to us. You want to be able to find different places. Try to read some guidelines, okay? If you send a straight poem to a gay magazine and they don't want that, it's just the ultimate stupid thing to do. And not only did you waste your time, you're wasting their time too. They're too busy with their own stuff. So try to fit in as much as you can. Are you going to know 100% of the answer of this is the perfect place for me? No, you're not. That's what's called chancing and risking, and that's what you have to do. But it's not a risk to send it to the wrong place. That's just plain stupid. So stay away from stupid. Go to some chances. Try to be as intelligent as you can and send stuff out there. All right? There's plenty of markets out there. Try to do the best you can on making judgments. most of the times they're not going to communicate to you anyway. Why'd you send it to us? I doubt it. You're lucky you get a form letter back if you get anything at all. That's how a lot of editors are. I'm not like that, but that's how a lot of editors are. So do your best you can. At least you're showing, you know, in your way that you're meaning to be respectful. Some people might not take it that way. Oh well. But you're not intentionally trying to be disrespectful. That's another thing. You got any last words there, John?
We covered in that. It's been a great episode because we got to mention some things and talk about things that are definitely really close to me. Once using the humor, of course, and of course knowing your markets and writing and pros and cons of, you know, not writing every day, so to speak, because I definitely don't believe in it. It's been a great episode. Really enjoyed it.
All right, John. Thank you very much for joining me on the show again. That's Guest House episode number 45, Humor, Writing Every Day, and Markets. All right, until next time, folks, I really appreciate you sticking with me. I know you'll be happy to get this out here. I'll be putting this out here actually today, so it's going to go out there pretty quick. God bless and thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.